My name's Brian. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, from Sydney, Australia. Make yourself comfortable. It's just another AA meeting. Just a few more people than normal. Could we start with a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years and the still suffering alcoholics out there? Okay. Hopefully everyone's been to one meeting this morning. If you haven't, welcome to the convention, the 2010 San Antonio International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know why I'm up here, but I was asked by the committee to chair a meeting and I'm grateful to do it. I do anything when I'm asked most times in AA, and this is one of those, and I've got nerves, so I don't know how the speakers are going, but I just wanted to start with a few things. The theme of the convention is A Vision for You, so if you haven't read it, I've read it a few times over the last few months, fantastic chapter, so I'll read the first part of it. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship and colourful imagination. It means release from care, boredom and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good, but not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapour that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship and approval. Momentarily we did. Then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration and despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. I like that. That was the end of my drinking. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. I came here. My sobriety date's 12th of May, 1981. So I've got a few years behind me now. I'll just share a bit of my story because I like doing that. I'm in an AA meeting and I haven't got a chance to share yet. A lot of people had come to AA at a young age, started drinking at a young age. That was how I started, about six. My parents said I used to, pick up drinks around parties that were left. 12 years of age, I got a job in the local chemist, delivering pharmaceuticals for the chemist. One for them, one for me, It became the start of a dual addiction, in a sense. 15 years of age, I had an older brother. Stole his birth certificate when I turned 15. He turned 18. Started drinking in pubs. We can drink in hotels at 18 in Australia. I had his birth certificate in my pocket. Just went to the pub, like everyone else. Every other 15-year-old that often, stands around the pub drinking beers. 15-year-old shouldn't be staying in pubs, really. There was something wrong. My parents knew there was something wrong and threatened to put me in juvie or, a home or something all the time. But they didn't know that I had alcoholism. They didn't know that was the problem. Failed school miserably, had no future going, and went to Queensland. If anyone knows Australia, I'm from Sydney, Queensland, beautiful place. You go there, sit in the sun and drink all the time, Take drugs, eat magic mushrooms, drop acid. Love it. I've got some friends from Queensland here. They got good AA up there too, so. But that was, near the end of my drinking. I was living in a car park. Shaving at the local hot water system that was on the beach and just getting out of it all the time, and there's no future. But my parents harassed me and said, I must do something with my life. So I enrolled in a nursing course. I was going to be a nurse. Lots of drinking, lots of women. It was great, The last year of my drinking, I was getting sicker and sicker, and I was drinking Southern Comfort and Ouzo. Beautiful drinks, you know. And still doing lots of drugs, you know. But at 18, I wanted to stop. You know, I wanted to stop, but no one offered me an answer. No one in the pub was telling me how to stop drinking, you know. They said I was a mess, but anyway, so eventually I went to work one morning, put on my uniform, and turned up on the ward, and the charge nurse said, "You look a mess." And I said, "I think I'm an alcoholic." And at that point, I was 3 months short of my 20th birthday. And a few hours later, I was sitting in the psychiatric unit of that hospital where I worked, still in my uniform, being admitted. And, you know, I don't know if I was scheduled, if I could have got up and walked out or not, but, you know, I was pretty sick and I just wanted to be there. I wanted help. And fortunately, while I was in there, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous was contacted and he came and saw me. He was 28 years old and 5 years sober and clean. Perfect person to come and see me. You know, there wasn't a lot of young people around at that time in AA. And this guy came, you know, and he told me and I said, "Yes, I think I'm an alcoholic. I should go." You know, there's no... At that point, don't ask me how I got that moment of clarity, but I'm glad I did. And I haven't had to pick up a drink since that moment. I got out of the psych unit eventually. You know, if anyone's got a wacky brain, I thought they were going to lock me away forever. I really did, but they let me out. I went to a meeting the first day out of the hospital, felt at home, saw the third tradition. That's what I had. That's what I still got. You know, I don't want to drink. That man became a sponsor. I joined a home group. The things that were suggested. The first few months I smoked marijuana. I was a social dope smoker, you know, but on my 20th birthday I decided that I wasn't going to get what these people were talking about in AA if I didn't make a major change. So I stopped smoking marijuana, started going to, as people have said, many meetings. Back in Sydney in those days it was go to as many meetings as you can for 3 months. And if you don't like it, you can go out and get drunk, you know. And after 3 months I'd gone to enough meetings to realise I wanted what this program had to offer. And I've kept coming, you know, I've been involved at a good level. I've, you know, been sober a while. If it wasn't worth staying, I wouldn't stay. You know, I've participated in a lot of life, and that's what AA gave me. You know, instead of what I was doing was, I'd probably be dead by now for sure. But I've been given the opportunity to participate in life and to participate in a great convention like this. And I have three great speakers I'll share for 20 minutes each, give or take. I've given them plenty of time. So in Australia, we've got laid-back attitude, so... And our first speaker will be Debbie from Missouri.
Hi, everybody. My name's Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 19th, 1990. That's a drink I remember. And my home group is the Sisters of Sobriety Women's AA meeting in Columbia, Missouri. Woohoo! We have an honorary sister. John's an honorary sister. And, you know, it's probably not the best home group in the world. You know, I hear people say that. It's probably not. We get really crazy sometimes, you know, especially when there's a full moon or, you know. But what I know is, I absolutely know, is that it is exactly where I'm supposed to be every Tuesday and Thursday night in Columbia, Missouri. So it's good to know that. I'm just going to ask you to do something. And I mean, it's not during the opening of the meeting. This is my 20 minutes. I think I can do what I want, hopefully, within reason. For some reason, they don't open with a serenity prayer. Would you mind opening it for all those who care to? If you don't, please don't. But if you would, join me with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Oh, there. When I got this letter and this topic, I mean, I was really surprised. And thank you to whoever and anyone that was involved in this. It truly is a gift, I think. Thank you. But one of the first things I did, I mean, I got the topic. They had the topic, let go and let God. And I thought, well, you know, it's better than Concept 5 or something. I wouldn't be very helpful up here. So I've done that. you know, I do know some, I can share some experience on letting go and letting God. And one of the first things I had to do was get a dictionary because, you know, there was words when I got sober in our books I had never heard, or if I had, I had the wrong idea about them. I didn't know what they meant. So I just, sounds silly maybe, but I looked up the word let. And what the definition that I got that I liked that spoke to me was release my grip and let go. And in let God is to grant permission. And that seems to be my experiences over and over. First of all, everything I've learned, I've had to learn by doing it wrong or not doing it. I learn the lesson of, if I'm to release my grip, of hanging on till death. And it's like, well, that's not working. Maybe, you know, I should try something else and listen to these people. And that was certainly my experience of getting to Alcoholics Anonymous. So another thing that just seemed profound to me was that the spiritual process here is not about getting something. It's about getting something out of the way so that what is there all along can shine. That has been my experience over and over. It's not out there. It's in there. But I just got all this crap piled up, all this fear and old ideas just piled up on top of it, that when that gets removed, enough of it gets removed, what is there will be able to come forth. I'll be able to see it. It doesn't appear all of a sudden. Oh, look, God showed up. It's like, no. It's like being in a dark room with the shades down. It's lifting the shades. And that's been what the steps have been for me. And in order to get ready for this, as, you know, as unexpected and kind of overwhelming as this was, I finished up a written 10th step. I'd gotten a new sponsor. I finished up a written 10th step. I shared that last week with her, continued through the rest of the steps, and asked this God of my understanding to move some things out of the way, to take that stuff that blocks me from this incredible loving power. So, you know, I've done what I've learned to do, is get that stuff out of the way. And in coming here, I had every single reason in the world, an excuse not to come here. It's like, I don't have any money. I hurt my back a couple years ago. I haven't worked. I can't afford that. How would I get there? Where would I stay? And, you know, one by one, that they just slowly got eliminated. My home group, bless their hearts, they paid for my registration. They voted. I didn't ask for it. I mean, I just about ran from the room. I mean, really? You want to do that? They paid for my registration. I got a friend, and she was coming. Her and a gal I sponsor knew a long time ago, and they said, do you want to ride down? We drove. If you want to ride down, you can come with us. Got a place to stay if you want a room with us. I mean, so the women in my home group, the gals I sponsor, and a very incredible, fabulous family, and you know who you are, made this possible. I have a tissue. I have more than one. So every reason I had, of course, when I found out that my name was going to be submitted, I said, well, okay, if you really want to. And then I waited. You know, I admit that I was kind of watching the mail. You know, they were going to let me know. I thought they pulled your name out of the hat. You know, it's like, well, if they pick my name out of the hat, I suppose they'll let me know. And I mean, the gal submitted my name in the winter. And it was getting towards the middle of April, and I'd been looking in the mail, and nothing. My husband was asking me. It's like, I haven't heard. And so, you know, about April 19th, I was like, you know what? It's probably fine. They didn't pull my name out of the hat. It's fine. And then I started some things that I've, some patterns in my life that I learned growing up and when I was drinking. I started letting go, but in a negative way. I started saying, you know, I didn't really want to go to Texas. You know, it's a long way. And, you know, I don't know if I even would like, you know, it's so long. And it's hot. It's really hot. I'm a 56-year-old menopause woman, and it's like, oh, my God, I really, you know, couldn't have stood it anyway. So I really didn't want to go. So, I mean, that's kind of this deal of, you know, let go and screw you. That's not a dirty word. And I mean, and I, you know, I learned that. I learned that in a family growing up. My dad was an alcoholic, you know, rest his soul. And he was an angry, vengeful alcoholic. If somebody crossed him, they paid. And I mean, he said things like, and forgive me, but this is what he used to tell me. He said, if someone crossed him, and people crossed him, he was crossed a lot. He said, I hope they die a slow death. And I was like, you know, that's kind of what I came here with. My mother divorced him in 1963. And every single family picture that we have, she is cut out of it. So, you know, if you see an arm, you see a baby sitting on a lap. So, you know, I knew how you let go. It's like, snip, snip, you're gone. Never liked you anyway. So, you know, that doesn't work very well in sobriety. The tools I came here with were weapons. You know, I was like hurting people with them. The first one I noticed was, you know, let go, never. Or let go, this was always interesting, and try harder. That was really painful. That one was painful because I just, I knew about AA in the last 10 years of my drinking. I drank for over 20 years. And I mean, I knew about it, but I was like, I know I'm an alcoholic. I mean, I know that absolutely, but I can do this myself. And that was a thought that almost killed me. And at some point, and those two kind of go together, let go never and let go and try harder. And finally, you know, a bloody painful surrender. I mean, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous dying of cirrhosis of the liver. All my hair had fallen out. I had, my skin was purple and bright purple, and my nose was bleeding every day. My gums were bleeding. I looked like I was 8 months pregnant, and I was dying from the disease of alcoholism. And I'd been hospitalized half a dozen times, and they were all really surprised when I left the hospital, and my esophagus had ruptured. I mean, three times I was dying from this disease, and I drank every time I left the hospital because I just could do this myself. I didn't come to you. And so that, those tools, those supposed let-go tools I learned, didn't work. And how can I tell today when I've let go and let God is by the results. The results are just so different. And this was another one. And it was usually entertaining, but painful also, but it was always entertaining. It was let go and watch this. I got a new one, you know, new plan. This'll do. This'll work. This'll fix it. And my favorite, it is kind of one of my most embarrassing ones, but it's one of my favorites, is I'd gotten out of treatment and hooked up with a guy I'd met. This was in 1980, and hooked up with a little biker guy I'd met in treatment, and we were drunk within a week, and we'd gone down to the Lake of the Ozarks, which is a resort place there, and, you know, I got tired of him real quick, and we picked up a hitchhiker, and, you know, he was kind of cute. And I thought, oh, I kind of like him better, so I ditched that guy, and I went with this hitchhiker, and basically, he was a homeless guy. He lived in the kind of abandoned basement of this business on the strip down at the lake, and he was a homeless guy, and, you know, I moved in with him. Absolutely. I moved in with the homeless guy. That was, watch this. This is my new plan. I let go of that. I got a new plan. And, you know, it was an interesting 3 months. You know, he had something I wanted, and you guys, it wasn't from the neck up, okay? So, you know, those are my plans. Those are my let-goes. And you know, the results were disastrous. I mean, disastrous, not just to me, but to the people that cared about me. They were terribly, terribly damaged and hurt and worried and disappointed and all of those things over and over and over. And so when I finally got here, out of desperation, I became willing. As willing as the dying can be, I finally, you know, and I didn't like it. I say this every time I talk. It's like, you don't have to like anything to do it. You just got to do it. And I mean, I didn't like AA. I hated it. I thought I was just going to erupt into flames in meetings. And it's like, oh my God, they're going to talk to me. You know, I hated that. But I went anyway. There was nothing left. And so I came here and I began to slowly, it changed, as it does. It wasn't an option for me to leave. It's just not. And so I started picking up some tools. I learned some tools. And one of the first ones with this whole God thing, I mean, I had a powerful surrender. When it was over, I mean, I admitted the truth about my drinking. I'd run from that for 22 years. When I admitted that, I had a profound spiritual experience. Not to be confused with an awakening. That came later in the steps. But it was experience enough to get my attention. There is something out there, and it must care about me. And I began to try to talk to that and tap into that on a daily basis. And I'd have problems. Oh, I had a lot of problems early on. And someone mentioned, they said, I can't and God can. I thought, God can. And someone told me about God cans. Has everybody heard about a God can? It's like, I made a God can. I mean, it's awesome because I'm thinking these things. And I think I should really let go of that. How should I let go of that? I should let go of it. And I start obsessing about how I should let go of this thing. And I'm not letting go of it. So what I do is I write it down on a piece of paper and I date it. And I say a prayer and I put it in this can. And the next minute, when I'm trying to think about it again, I remember, oh, I did an action. I physically did something, and I let it go. And the next time I think about it, I just kind of, it's a give it back. It's where it belongs. I've given it to this God of my understanding. And it's been a wonderful tool. It's helped me so much. As a matter of fact, I dumped it all out before I came here a few days ago, and there was stuff in there from like 2 years ago. It's like, what was I worried about that for? You know, God, that turned out way better than I thought. So I put a whole bunch of new stuff in there, and you know, that's how that works. How am I doing? Okay. He's gonna yank on my dress. I'm getting close. Don't, not too hard. Lightly. Poor Brian. I just embarrassed him. Sorry. And another thing, moving on, another thing that really helped me, it was like a practice I had to get into. The last years of my drinking, I couldn't sleep. As much alcohol as I poured in my body, you'd think I'd just lay there for days. And I'd wake up, you know, just terrified and reach for a drink. I mean, I was drinking because I needed a drink. I didn't want a drink. I needed a drink or I'd fly apart in a million pieces. One of the first gifts of sobriety was that I could sleep through the night. that was just like, wow, if nothing gets better, you know, I'm not pouring poison in my body and I can sleep. And it chugged along just really well till I turned 50. And then that stopped. Somebody just like pulled that. It's like, well, now guess what? You can't sleep anymore. So I'd read it in some literature or heard it at a meeting or something. It's what I call the ABCs. It's the alphabet thing that I do. I lay there and my mind wakes up for the first time in the entire day. I'm trying to go to sleep and it gets really loud about all the stupid things I've done or all that. And what I do is I start with the letter A and I think about something. Gee, you know anything that starts with the letter A that you're grateful for? Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, Al-Anon. I'm also very grateful to that program. My husband went to Al-Anon 6 months before I got sober. Figure the math out there. I just start going over in my mind something I'm grateful for that starts with A, and I go through the alphabet. I'll do some names. Anne, you know, Abby, Amy. I go through that, and then I move to B. And Dr. Bob, you know, and it's this progression. It gets my crazy thoughts I'm not letting go of. I'm trying to try harder or figure out a new plan or make it stop. And I mean, what I have to do is attach my thinking to something positive, because I will spiral down a negative hole and I can't stop. I can't just go, I'm going to stop spiraling down a negative hole. It doesn't work. I got to attach my thinking to something positive, and then it creates a rhythm. And I promise you, I have never gotten through the entire alphabet. I get to the farthest I've gotten, I think, is L. And I mean, I'm asleep every time. It's a powerful let go, let God tool for me. And I know a lot of alcoholics have a hard time falling asleep. And I do that. I did it last night. I didn't get very far. And it was like 2:00 in the morning. This is like a lot of stuff going on. Woo. 15 years ago, I went to my first international in San Diego. A lot of folks from San Diego that went there are here, I know. And I remember my husband, I was 5 years sober. We were excited. Yeah, we want to go. How are we going to get there? I have no idea. We don't have any money, really. Our car was kind of a crappy, it wouldn't have made it, you know, from central Missouri to San Diego. No, probably not. And so we started praying about it, and we went ahead and registered. And I remember like a week or two before we were to leave, we didn't have a car that worked very well. And my husband was driving home, and there's an intersection by our home where there's a lot of businesses, restaurants and things. And he said he was driving home in his work truck, and he's like, I just pulled the truck over real quick and jumped out of it, and there was a dollar bill floating across the road. And this guy can spot a penny in, like, tall weeds at night. He saw this dollar, and he probably almost wrecked the truck. And he jumped out and grabbed this dollar, and here come another one. He just grabbed, there's like 5 or 6, and he just stuck them in his pocket. And when he got home, there was, like, almost $60 had just blown through the intersection. And that was, you know, that'll be a couple tanks of gas if we have a car that'll make it. You know, what are we going to do about that? And he lets go and lets God a whole lot easier. Maybe it's an Al-Anon thing. They've had to. I don't know. But he is more practiced at that than I am. And he's like, oh, we'll figure it out. We'll figure something out. And 2 days before we were supposed to leave, and we were planning on camping. You know, we were looking like a van kind of thing. You can camp at little places for pretty cheap. And I was a lot younger then, and I could camp. And so we were looking. Anyway, 2 days before we were leave or so, we drive by this little, it's the old Minute Inn, Franz Diner. They just, Broadway Diner, they just moved it recently. And there's this beautiful white van, conversion van with blue stripes on it, for sale. And he goes in to find out about it and makes a call and calls the bank first. And we didn't have any credit. We didn't have bad credit. We didn't have any. And, well, he had some bad credit, but I didn't have any. And the bank, we weren't sure about the bank. He called the lady, called the number, and the lady that answered was somebody we had done work for. And she said, oh, I want you to have that van. If the bank won't lend you money, I will. It's like, we got a van. So it's just like here. Every single reason that I come up with why it's not going to work, if it's supposed to work and I move forward, it seems to work. And work in a way that I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to get that pretty white van 2 days before. It's like, oh, no way. That'll never happen. You know, I constantly, my thinking sells me short. You know, thank goodness I don't listen to it all the time. And the last thing, how am I at?
Done.
That's the last thing. One thing is I just want to say, and this seems to go with the let go, let God thing, is I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and it loves me back.
Thank you, Debbie, for that. It's a good way to start, I think. The next speaker, when I first got saved, I was pretty young, and there's all these old people sitting in meetings, and they all had grey hair and things like that, and they all were sober longer than I'd been alive. Drove me crazy, you know, and I didn't want anything to do with them. Come to international conventions now to hear those sorts of people. You know, they've been sober longer than I've been alive. And fortunately, I've got one on the table to share today with us. So if you welcome Steve Kay from Arizona.
My name is Steve, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Hello, family. You are my family, whether you know it or not. And I'll also tell you something because it applies in this room. You know what they say about AA, don't you? We're like the mafia. We got family wherever we go. My home group is, I'm not well yet. I have to have more than one home group. I have two in Prescott, Arizona. One is the morning attitude adjustment group that meets every morning at 7 o'clock at Bill Pizza on the square in Prescott, Arizona, and you're welcome there any day. And it meets every day of the week, so you can't say that, if you get to Prescott, that you couldn't go, okay? And the second one, and I'm a founder of the Seniors in Sobriety in Prescott, Arizona, and so that's also my home group. So if there's any SISers in here, I are one now, whether I like it or not. And my sobriety date is September 12th of 1960. Yeah. That's a gift from God. When I got the letter that these wonderful people hear God, and I saw the subject, I breathed a sigh because God is, next to you people, God is the most important thing in my life. And I didn't come to this easy. I'll say a little about, how I got here. We always, lots of places you go, they call it qualifying. And I'll do that as quick as I can because I want to talk about God. I took my first drink at the ripe old age of 18. I was blessed at that time to be sent to college by the United States Navy. And I had three buddies there, and we decided to go sightseeing, and we went to Milwaukee. And I don't have to tell you what we do in Milwaukee. And I'll tell you, I only took one social drink in my life. It was that first drink that was from here to there. Once it passed over my lips, it has never been social ever since. They finally threw us out of the Schlitz Brewery that afternoon. Schlitz had accomplished exactly what they wanted to. I swore to my buddies that I was going to drink every drop of Schlitz in Milwaukee. And I would still be there trying, except for the fact on the very first occasion that I was introduced to alcoholic beverages, my three buddies dragged me out of Milwaukee and put me on the train and got me out of there, or I'd probably still be there trying. And that's the way it went. All the rest of the stuff, blackouts, passed out, relationships. I wasn't very good at those. I came to one night with a lady beside me on the car. I'd been an usher at a friend's wedding in Waukesha, Wisconsin, if you're anybody here from Waukesha. And I fell in love at the reception. I came to out of this blackout, and I'm looking at, along the road, they have these signs, where
the road sign, and it tells you the state you're in. And I was in Illinois, and I couldn't figure out how the hell I got to Illinois and had this lady beside me. And you know, I mean, that, you learn to be very delicate about conversations with your sweeties, you know. And I don't know how I got around to asking her where we were going, but finally she told me we were on our way to get married. And back in the Midwest in those days, the only place you could get married overnight was in Indiana, and we were headed for Indiana. And so that's how I was with relationships. And somehow, by the grace of God, and I don't know how it happened, I managed to finish college. You know, all the things that they say you do when you get to be drinking is, you know, I changed my major in college not in order to learn more, in order to drink more. And I managed to get through, and I got a commission in the United States Navy. I always said it took an act of Congress to make me a gentleman, because it says in there, by the authority of the President of the United and the Congress of the United States, we appoint you an officer and a gentleman in the United States Navy. Well, that lasted about 3 years until they asked me to leave. And I don't have to tell you why they asked me how to leave. And the miracle of the story begins there, because, and I won't go into why this happened and how it happened, because anybody that knows anything about my church will tell you it is impossible. But I got out of the Navy 1 month, and I was in seminary the next month. And it wasn't any better. I should have been thrown out after the first year. I failed two courses, and normally one course failure was automatic expulsion. And I don't know today to stay why they let me stay, but I believe it's because during the first year in seminary, my father died, and I had to go home and help my mother. And at the end of the year, they said, you know, we've had, Steve, you had a hard year. Well, why don't you take the summer off, go to spend it with your mother, and we'll let you come back, and we'll find a way for you to make up those courses. And by the grace of God, there was a man that was admitted to seminary during that summer who was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he became my sponsor and got me to Alcoholics Anonymous when I never would have gone by myself. I'm not good at asking for help. I'm still not good for asking for help. And if you people had waited for me to ask for help, I would be dead today. And he got me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the miracle and the magic started. And that's enough to say about how I got here. I want to talk about the topic, and it's let go and let God. And what I first thought of when I got that letter and saw the topic is, for me, let go and let God is about the first three steps. You know, the first steps, it says that we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. I am grateful to God that they used the word powerless. Anything else, and I would have never got it. If they had said it was a problem, even if they had said it was a disease, I would have never admitted that I had it. But I knew I was powerless. You know, Brian read those four horsemen of terror that the book talks about. Well, I can tell you some other horrors pushing the four horsemen. And one of them is hope. It was a word that I had lost. I was hopeless and helpless when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe the first thing I got at the first meeting I went to was hope. I really seriously only tried to quit drinking once in my life, and I knew what you people know, that one drink is never enough. And I knew when I tried to quit that sooner or later I was going to pick up another drink. And like I say, I was in the Navy at a time, and a friend came back from overseas, and we had to celebrate, and the only way I knew how to celebrate was to get a jug. And I really never tried to quit again, because I didn't. I knew I could never do it. And the other, you know, I love some of the fun things that get you here, you know, are the blacking out and the passing out. And there are people that have you believe there's reasons that you drink. And I don't believe that. I drank because I was an alcoholic. I didn't pee in my pants because my little child of the past peed in their pants. I peed in my pants because I drank too much. And I did a few things other than pee in my pants, too.
But the other one is the hole in the gut. And I believe there are people that call this disease a soul sickness, and I believe it is a soul sickness. I had no soul because booze had stolen it away. And the last thing that I would like to say is the other thing I believe is universal in this disease is being alone. I have literally danced on the bar with 100 people clapping and been the loneliest guy in the room. And that's the other thing I got from you people, is that's why I call you my family. Because, you know, there's nothing wrong with my family, but it wasn't made for me. And there are a lot of good reasons for that, but I'd like to begin now by telling you what, you know, I thought, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and you people talked about God, I was in seminary. I want you to know I did believe in a God, and I love that God. I still love that God, and I still have that God. But I had to learn about God from you, an entirely different God than the God that I have in church. And I am, believe it or not, an ordained Episcopal priest, and I still practice my religion. But you have given me far more than that. And the first thing I had to learn is for me, and what was so important, were pages 26 and 27 of the big book in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't know those two pages, and I think it's really significant that Bill dedicated two pages to this subject. It's the story about Roland H. and Dr. Carl Jung. And if you remember the story, Roland had our problem, and we went to Switzerland. Obviously, he had money that I didn't have to go to Switzerland and put himself under Jung's care for a year. And at the end of the year, he says, and I can't quote the big book, and I don't try to, but it says something to the effect that he thought he had such a knowledge of the inner workings of his mind that he could come back and be perfectly happy in the United States. And in 30 days, he was drunk as a lord. And he went back to Jung, and he said, Doctor, he says, are there no exceptions to this rule? And Jung looked him right in the eye, and he says, there are exceptions, and I have been trying to use my techniques to give them to you. But with alcoholics of your kind, I have never, ever been successful. And Roland felt like the doors of hell had closed upon him, and then he said again to Jung, he says, are there no exceptions? And Jung says, yes, there have been times in history where people have had vital spiritual experiences. And Roland, believe it or not, I mean, this is what's important. I mean, he was an Episcopalian, and he was a devout one. He was a vestryman in his church. I mean, that made him special, you know. And so Roland proceeded to tell Jung all of that information. And Jung looked him right in the eye and he said, while your religious beliefs are very good, they do not constitute the necessary spiritual experience to recover from this disease. Like many of us who have faith in religion, which I did, I confused or I was misunderstood. I thought religion and spirituality were one and the same thing. Thank God for you people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You have taught me that they are two different things. It's not to say that a religious person can't be spiritual and a spiritual person can't be religious, but they need not be the same. Without that information, I don't think I would have ever got it, because that has put me on a verge of a travel burden of looking for what spirituality means. And the best thing I can tell you about spirituality today is it's a mystery. And thank God it's a mystery. Because if it weren't a mystery, we'd be packing it up and trying to sell it.
And so that was the beginning for me, and I did get sober. I had my last drink on September 11th in New Haven, Connecticut, and I went to a meeting, and my sponsor had taught me enough by then. I was never farther from a meeting than a phone. I picked up a phone, and I got him into a meeting in West Hartford, Connecticut, on the 12th of September, and I haven't never found it necessary to take a drink since then. And for that, I am grateful, and I don't take any credit for it. Now, let me tell you something that's nice about this room, because when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I want you to know, I never would have had two lovely ladies there. I remember when the first one of you good-looking ladies came into a meeting and they got my attention. Oh, it's wonderful. I probably talked too long already. How much? All right, I got some time. I want to talk a little bit more because the let go part for me is encompassed in the first step. Let go means to surrender. And surrender, I learned from the second edition of the big book, which was in print when I came in. There's a story in the back. If you don't do it, get it. The book, it's published in Experience, Strength, and Hope. By a professor, it calls The Professor and the Paradoxes. And a paradox is a statement on its face value appears to be untrue. And there are four paradoxes there, and I'm not going to tell you what three of them are because you've got to go find them yourself. But the one I want to talk about is surrender to win. And when I first heard that, I thought it was BS. I said, I was brought up to believe if you didn't fight your way through your problems yourself and get, that you were less than. And I never knew you could surrender to victory. And that's what has to happen for me in the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to give up completely. The book says until we admit to our innermost self that we're powerless over alcohol, we don't have a chance. The 12 and 12 tells us there's only one step we have to take 100%. That's the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the second step came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It's where I began to learn about spirituality. I eventually became a Navy chaplain, and I'm grateful to God for that. And I wasn't much of a parish priest, I want you to know that, but I could be okay as a Navy chaplain. But I had a Salvation Army chaplain that was with me, and he told me this story, which opened the door for me. You know, it says in the second step, we came to believe. And for a long time in there, I used to stop there until one day this guy asked me what the next word was, and I couldn't think of it. And so I said in, because that's what people of faith talk about. They believe in having faith in God. But the next word is not in, it's that. Now, this may seem like a play on words, but to me, that's the difference between spirituality and religion. Religion is about believing in something. Spirituality is about trusting in something. Let go and let God. And he told me this story. You may have heard it. I've heard it since many times. Heard it on television even. But it's about going to the circus. And you know, you go to the circus and you've been there before. You've seen it before. And the high wire act comes on, and they turn out all the lights and then they start rolling the drums, and you're sitting there in your chair, and you've seen it before, so you're pretty sure you got faith, right? You believe in their getting up on the wire and going across there, And sure enough, that's just the way it is. The spotlight comes on, and there's a woman on one ladder and a man at the other. They climb up, they get the little balancing pole, and they go across, and they go back and forth, And you believe in, right? Well, you know what this guy, dirty guy, told me? He says, you know what the difference between spirituality and religion is, don't you? I said, no. He says, religion is when you have faith in and you sit there and believe in on your ass. Spirituality is about trust. And that means you get out of your seat, you climb up the ladder, and you get in the wheelbarrow that they roll across the wire. And that, I believe, folks, is what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I would like to think we don't tell you what to believe and how to believe it. but we tell you what you can do to get it. And those 12 steps are the way that we do it. And it says in the 12th, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Now, there's a couple other things I had to learn about God. And one of them is because I had a very narrow version of God. What you people have taught me, I'm happy to say that my God is too big to fill any one church. And what that means to me is I'd like you to vision, if you can, that God were a great mountain right here where all of you are. You know, and Brian's here on this side of the mountain, and Debbie over there on that side of the mountain, and I'm over there on that side of the mountain, and Carmel is over here on this side of the mountain. And guess what? We're all looking up at the mountain, but what do we see? We have a different picture. You know, I can call Carmela from here over here, and we'll start talking about God, and some of what she's seeing is what I'm seeing. But there's Brian's here, and I'm way over there. I call him, he talks about God. I never can see a thing about her. And the same thing about Debbie over there. She can call us. And that's how I believe about God today. God is too big for me to understand all by myself. But I'll say one more thing about God that I believe. Up the mountain are many paths to the top. And guess what? When you get to the top, the view is always the same. And that... that's what trust is all about. The trust is that God is too big for me to understand. And so my job is to let God, and turn my life and will over to the care of God as I understand Him. And I would like to say one more thing, if I may, about the third step. A lot of people talk about the third step, but you know, I am only convinced of one thing today, that is God's will for me, and that is simply that I not pick up a drink today. And because I have learned through spirituality and you people to trust God, I trust if I do that and follow the principles that you have given me to live, that the rest of my life will be taken care of. And that's exactly what has happened for me for almost 50 years. Thank you and thank God.
Bailing. I'd like to welcome our third speaker, Carmela from Washington, D.C.
Hi, family. My name is Carmela, and I am a grateful alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 29th, 1995. And that makes me the baby of this group. I like being the baby. Woo, new beginnings. My home group is the Yays and the Nays. We meet in the U.S. Capitol on Tuesday mornings at 7:45 a.m. If you're ever in Washington, D.C., you're all invited to stop by and visit with us. I have a couple of my home group members here. I'm grateful for those old fellas. They keep me in check. I have another home group. It's called Living Sober by the Book. We meet on Wednesday nights at 7:30 p.m., and you're all welcome to join us as well. It's a beginner's meeting. It's a great group. I'm going to qualify as well. I started drinking when I was 12 years old, and from the first time I drank, I didn't know what I was doing. I just mixed some stuff in a cup. Whatever they had, I poured it in. So y'all know what happened, right? I peed in my pants and I puked. Because that's what you do. And my friends hid me from their parents. My mother was the type of mother that would whip everybody, so they could not take me home. So they hid me for the night. And when I came to the next day, I said, I gotta learn how to do this right. I knew I messed up. But thank God I never did learn how to do this right. You know, I'm like Brian, you know, after a while the alcohol was no longer working, so I had to add some other chemicals to my body. I was like, when I went to treatment, they told me I was a human garbage can. I was like, what? Y'all talking about me? You know, but that's what happened to me. I got here by way of a rehabilitation center. It was called the Charter Meadows Behavior Center. A friend of mine had actually gone there 6 months before. We used to get together once a year at Thanksgiving. He had a son the same age as my son. We had been friends for many years. And that year when he came, I was like, wow, he looked good. Where he been? And I'm like, he ain't been where I've been. I knew that. And so he shared his experience of going into this treatment center. And I thought to myself, I got the same insurance, and when I get ready, I know where to go. Never mind that my sister had been in AA 5 years prior to that. But they say you can't help the people closest to you. And my sister tried to hit us on the head with that big book. It was it was terrible, you know, and I was very mean to my sister. You know, I didn't want no parts of AA. In my family, there were many people who drank alcoholically, but as long as you function and you went to work, you were all right. So I thought I was all right. Now, once I went to this treatment center and I saw the sign behavior center, I'm like, what am I doing at a behavior center? I didn't think I had a behavior problem. I still had all the stuff on the outside that said everything was okay. I had the house, the kid, the dog, the job, all the stuff. But I had lost me. And when Steve talked about that soul sickness, that was me. I, too, was raised Catholic, so I knew about God. But I was no longer relying on that God to guide me in my life. And when I went to the treatment facility, the counselor said, there is a God and you're not it. I'm like, who do you think you're talking to? You know, but that was exactly what I needed, you know. And from that point on, I surrendered. And he told me I needed to go and pray to God. And I was like, oh, Lord, I can't go say those prayers. You don't know what I've been doing. And he said, don't say those prayers that you know. Why don't you start with just help? Well, I was not the type of person to ask anybody for any help. I would help you, but please leave me alone. I don't need any help. And from that point forward, I began to ask for help. I'm grateful to that counselor who told me that. So they told me some things to do in the rehabilitation center. They told me to get a sponsor. No, they told me to get a temporary sponsor. So I went to the first meeting outside of treatment. I said, hey, will you be my temporary sponsor? There was a lady that had 10 years. And she said, sure, baby. Call me every night. And after about 9 months, she said, are you temporarily here? I said, what's she talking about? Them AA people, they play tricks on you. You know, that's how they get you. They just don't tell you everything. I'm like, look, I'm old. I was 35. I was like, I don't got time for this. Y'all need to hurry up and tell me what's going on. But they would only say, keep coming back. More would be revealed. I'm like, if somebody else says that, I'm going to slap them. You know, but I kept coming back. After the lady asked me was I temporarily here, I did begin to look for a permanent sponsor. They said, find somebody that got what you want. And I saw a lady, she was so peaceful. And I was like, wow, I need some of that peace in my life because I was truly chaotic. Everything about me was chaotic. And I asked the lady to be my sponsor, and she had been my sponsor for the past 14 years. I, too, recently have a new sponsor who's here today somewhere. I lost her. But I'm grateful that God saw fit to put this lady in my life. She guided me. She showed me how AA works. She didn't just tell me. And I miss her, and I love her. She told me, just do what I do. You know, she took me to meetings. She picked me up. She'd tell me where to meet her. She took me to the fellowship activities. And boy, I was like, the party is on. My sister-in-law always says, the party is here in AA. And it's true. I thought life was over when I got here, but the party is here in AA. So I'm grateful for that. All right, I want to move on and talk about let go and let God. When I got the topic, I think I got an email before I got a letter. I'm like, I don't know what that about. They all got the letter first. But at any rate, it's all perfect in God's world, right? So I got the email. I was like, oh, no, why they give me that? I always say, why they give me that? Because they always give me something. And they always give me exactly what I need. I just don't know it at the moment. So when I saw let go and let God, I'm like, okay, that's the first three steps. Because that's how I was taught. And the first step was admitting that I was powerless. And I had to give up the alcohol. That's all I wanted y'all to help me with. Just let me stop drinking alcoholically. I thought if you could teach me how to control it. That looking around makes people too happy. So I might drink it somewhere in the bathroom or something. And I was looking. And again, they just kept saying, keep coming back, more will be revealed. I'm like, these people, they so corny. But I kept coming back because I wanted to hear what else are they going to tell me. So once the alcohol was removed, and I began to see how unmanageable my life was. And boy, when they first, my sponsor first had me start writing about how unmanageable my life was, because I couldn't see it. I'm like, I don't know what y'all talking about. I still had a job. I'm raising my kid. I'm doing all this stuff on the outside. But when I began to see how unmanageable my life was and how I was still that little girl inside, the little girl that took that first drink, I had no life skills. I was not able to cope with people or be in relationships. You talk about cutting people out of the picture. I cut them out physically. Look, don't ever talk to me no more. I don't want to see you. You know, that's it. I used to kick people to the curb. And that was one of the first lessons I learned here was we don't throw people away. I'm one of 12 children, and I'm 6 in the middle. And I said, well, my parents have all these kids. Are they crazy? What's not wrong with them? It was me. You know, because you people tell me I had some issues before I ever picked up. And when I began to look at how unmanageable my life was, I began to look at how I used to do things as a child. I used to sit in a closet and watch what's going on in my house. Now, you know that's crazy. Why am I sitting in a closet watching what's happening? Oh, boy, God has delivered me. I am no longer sitting in the closet. I am actively participating in life today. And coming to believe. Whoa, they tell me it was a process. Because like I said, I was raised religious. And so I was like, oh, not that God. And they said, just come. And in time, come to. The fog was lifted. And I could begin to hear you people talk about your God. And then in time, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And, you know, I had to get some new ideas about that power. You know, you people tell me I had to let go of those old ideas. My sponsor initially told me, use my God. My God is loving and caring. I was like, what? You know, I was going to hell. I was damned. You know, but I began to use her God. And then I began to talk to other people about their God. You know, some people tell me they used a group of drunks. I'm like, a group of drunks? Yeah. That's a power greater than myself. Some people tell me, use some good old direction. And that came at the direction of my sponsor. Then they told me some good oily discipline. I'm like, oh, Lord. I knew I was in trouble because I am not disciplined. I was not disciplined. You know, I was just doing what I want, when I want, who I want, and anything else. But I had to be disciplined by the program, by the application of the steps in my life. Then I got involved at the area level, and I come from Area 13, and we got a wonderful area, a fellowship of people that support each other. I mean, I don't know how many Area 13 people are here today, but thank you all. I love you. I know you love me, even when I don't love me. Once I got involved at the area level, I began to learn about the concepts. Oh, wait a minute, I skipped the group. Hold up, let's go back to home group. The home group told me about the traditions. Those are those other things. I think I didn't need that. Well, let me tell you, the first tradition I learned was we're self-supporting through our own contribution. I was like, what? You know, I was not self-supporting when I got here. Your money was my money, meaning my man's money was my money, and my money was my money. You know, and anybody else's money that I could get was my money. But thank God I don't live that way today. When I got involved at the area level, I got to learn about the concepts. That was some more. I got to learn about the good oily design of AA and how the structure works. Letting go and letting God is just, for me, it's just about following the winners in this program. My first experience with letting go, I wasn't letting go of nothing. It was with Clawbox. I was like, help. You know, I thank God for the people he put in my path. There was a woman, I didn't feel free initially to talk to my sponsor about everything. So there was a woman God put in my life. And I used to wear that woman out. Well, I know she's in here somewhere. But I used to wear her out. And sometimes she would just say, okay, baby, that's enough. Let's go sleep now. You know, tomorrow's another day. Don't try to get it all at once. You know, easy does it. Y'all just say those cornball things. Easy does it, but do it. What are they talking about? But I'm grateful for the women that God put in my life and the men that today I have relationships with. When I got here, I didn't have relationships. Like, I thought I knew how to deal with women because I got 8 sisters. That was a joke. I found out that I really did not have relationships with women. And again, I had to surrender that. Letting go and letting God for me is surrendering. Whatever I think I'm controlling, because I got serious control issues, still, it's not as bad as it used to be. It has gotten better. I try on a daily basis to apply 10, 11, and 12 steps in my life. I try to help somebody, go to a meeting. Each morning I get up and I pray and I meditate. And I use the big book and the 12 and 12 because it gives me specific directions. This way I don't have to think about it. It says in the morning or upon arising, you know, think about your 24 hours and the day to come and ask God's guidance and that I be, I'm not selfish and self-centered in my motives. And then at night I do the 10th step. And if necessary, I'll do a written 10th step. I don't usually call my sponsor and share with it, but that's a good idea. not on a daily basis, but I will begin to do that. She's here. she says I sponsor her anyway, but that's not true. but I look at my day and I try to see where I was wrong and if I harmed somebody. That was one thing I couldn't do when I got here. The treatment facility actually gave, when each person left, they would give you a gift. And again, a joke. The 10th step. I'm like, why he give me that one? But it was so that I can look at the part I played in the madness in my life because I was blaming everybody and everything. I wasn't responsible for anything. Once getting involved in the area level, I have become responsible. I take that responsibility declaration to heart, and I try to live it and be there for the next person. Letting go and letting God allows me to be human. I was with some newcomer ladies that traveled here with me, and I was crying like a baby this morning. And they told me, oh, we thought you had it all together. You know, I'm like, are you joking? You know, I just have 24 hours, just, you know, and I say this all the time, all we have is today. I got the same 24 hours you got. It says, who got up earliest this morning? I think I did. That's it. I'm still human. I get to surrender on a daily basis to my fears, my anxieties, because I still have them. But today, fear don't have me like it used to have me. It's not false evidence appearing real in my life. False evidence appearing real. Today is face everything and recover. And if I don't know how, I try to stop, think, who I'm going to call. and ask for some help. And then respond to the situation. I try not to react to the situations in my life today or circumstances. And sometimes I just have to say I'm powerless and leave it to God totally. And that's difficult because, like I said, I'm still a control freak. And my family members will tell you that. She's running everything. But I've learned how to detach with love. I think you talked about Al-Anon. They sent me to Al-Anon, too, when I got married. I came in here, and after 3 years of sobriety, I was like, yeah, I'm ready for a husband now. I done the thing, you know, stay out of the relationship. Okay, I'm ready for a husband. So I took a hostage, okay. He was a willing participant. And they sent me to Al-Anon. I'm like, well, I need to go there. But Al-Anon taught me how to detach with love. I'm so grateful for Al-Anon. You know, and, you know, I've been to a couple other 12 steps. I got many issues. I stopped smoking, going to Nicotine Anonymous. You know, I've got done with the food issues. I deal with those on a daily basis. If for anything that ails me, there is a solution. I really believe in the 12 steps and that somebody's going to help me. And, again, that's following that good orderly direction from the God of my understanding, who puts people in my life to tell me where to go, because I don't be trying to go on my own. They'd be like, I was at a women's retreat a couple weeks ago, and a woman hands me a pamphlet. I'm like, huh? I was like, who asked her? But that's God, again, giving me some direction, you know, and I just get to surrender that I don't know what's best for me all the time. And I sure don't know what's best for you. I can offer a suggestion, but that's it. But before I got here, I could tell you. But now it's just a suggestion. And, you know, then you can choose to do with it as you like. But before, I would twist your arm and make you. So, again, letting go and letting God is allowing the blessings that I receive from you people in AA to not hold on to them, but to pass them on to somebody else. And that's what you people have taught me. I can't keep it if I don't give it away. So I try to give it away to a newcomer. Or old time, I don't care who it is, give it to somebody. They don't even have to be in the fellowship. You know, people just come up and talk to me. I'm just like, Lord, I must have that look. Open. You know, sometimes I want to say, put your nickel in the box. But you people have taught me it's free. I can't charge for it. Like he was talking about, we'd be trying to package it up and sell it. You know, and people ask me sometimes, you know, how are you so serene, especially in the midst of chaos? I pray all day long. I try to remember at least one phrase, because my mind be scattered. But I try to remember at least one phrase out of my morning meditation. So it says, when you're faced with indecision, because you are going to be faced with it at some point throughout the day, try to meditate on that phrase before reacting to the situation. And that's what I try to do on a daily basis. I've received many blessings from AA. I have a whole new family. Matter of fact, my family say I spend more time with y'all than I do with them, but I try to balance it out. But it's a balancing act, you know. I try to invite my family in, but most of them don't want to come. They be like, leave me alone. And I know today that I can't do that, you know. And they taught me that I may be the only big book that my family ever reads without actually reading it. And so I just try to live the program. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life and given me a new life. And for that, I'm grateful. I thought I was living before, but I came in here and I found out I wasn't living at all. I was just going through the motions. I was like, huh? Thought I was grown. Had it going on. But I found out that I didn't. And today, I don't have to have it going on. You know, I was drinking. I thought I had to be the big shot, you know. But today, I try to stay out of the limelight. I am really a shy person. I know people don't believe it, but I'm really a shy person, and I try to stay behind the scenes. But I know sometimes, you know, God wants to use me, and I have to be willing to step up and allow him to do that, which is difficult for me. I have gone back to church since I came to AA, because before, at the end of my drinking, I wasn't going to church anymore. And I read it in the big book. I was like, this book, big book has a lot of information in it. Yeah, I know, but sometimes, I tell you, I read the big book every day. Like I said, day and night, because I do the 10th step 11th step in the morning and 10th step in the evening, but I swear they keep putting new words in there. Every time I read, it's something different. And someone else told me, you know, because I highlight my books and write on them and all this kind of stuff. I write in other people's books, too. I was like, hey, call me. And I offend some people because I do that, but I know you're not going to lose your book. But someone told me, get some new books, because otherwise you just read the highlighted parts, you know, and then you miss the rest of the message. And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. I keep getting great ideas from you people in AA how to surrender, because for me, letting go and letting God is surrendering to the God of my understanding. It's also about forgiveness. That's a big one. But, you know, it started out with me forgiving myself and then learning how to forgive other people. And today I try to start my day out with 10 passes. I'm like, 10 passes? Okay, 10 people get a pass. After that, I got to go in the closet. Get on my knees and ask God to help me. And Brian just told me, so that's all. I just want to encourage each of you to cherish the journey. Cherish the journey. And with that, I'll keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share. Wow, good.